Hi, and welcome to Heroes in Our Midst. I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Coop, and today's episode is a pretty special one for the two of us who now make up the team behind this podcast project. Sports psychologist extraordinaire, Dr. Adrienne Leslie Toogood, and myself. When we started this podcast project in the summer of 2020, we just wanted to talk to Olympians because the games weren't happening. Not only because of the incredible athletes, coaches, trainers, and officials that they are, although that did bring them to our attention, but because of the incredible humans that they are. We wanted you to get to know the people behind the performances so that we could all relate to them, we could all learn from them, and we could all be inspired. Well, we found so much more than we bargained for, truly. We found heroes who walk among us, and in the telling of their journeys, we could each find something of value for our own. We have now wrapped up our first group of stories, or season one, as we are enjoying calling it, and we are already so excited about season two. The lineup of guests, well, we'll get to that. For today, Adrienne and I wanted to take a look back at season one for some of the highlights along the way, some of the takeaways, some of the special moments and stories that have been shared. But we needed someone to ask us the questions this time. So why not ask one of the very best our province has to offer? Ace Burpee, an incredible human who thousands of Manitobans wake up to every morning on Virgin Radio. He agreed to sit down with us, albeit through Zoom, and what an honor it was to welcome him to our show.
Well, it's my pleasure. I am honored. And I was stoked when you first reached out. I'm like, all right, I'm going to start listening to these. And I learned a ton. I was introduced to not only some people, I didn't know their story, but like some actual facts of, like, I learned about sports I didn't know were a thing. And part of me felt badly that I didn't, but I'm like, no, that's all right. I'll take the L on that and do a deep dive into these. It was awesome. So let's start with this though, just to sort of ease into it. And then I want to ask you so you can be ready for this, but like so I was surprised during some of the interviews, whether it was by the person or their story or what they went through. So we'll get into that, but how did the whole podcast come to be first off?
Great. Well, I think I'll start that one off, Michelle. So I'm someone, anyone who knows me, I often have a lot of ideas and many of them go in a file and never come to fruition, but COVID happened. And obviously everyone was affected by that. I usually travel a lot. I'm usually out in field of play and I wasn't, I was in my basement. The Olympics got canceled. I have such an unbelievable privilege of spending time with incredible human beings. I see the transformative journey that sport can be. I see the growth that happens. And I think that, you know, a lot of times we look forward to the Olympics. People don't pay attention to the sport. They watch the Olympics and they get enamored with it. And now with COVID, we're all as a world trying to figure out what to prioritize and why are things even important. And I guess I really wanted to share with the world the story of sport and the humans that become in sport. And I couldn't think of a better place to start by thinking of some of our unbelievable Olympians and Paralympians and coaches and officials, people who work at that level in the province of Manitoba. And so I also at the same time was listening to a bunch of things during this time. And I'd listened to someone named Sindra Kampoff in the US who had done a whole series. And at the end of her series, she had someone interview herself rather than her doing the interview. She's more like a sports psych person like myself. And she had a professional person come and do the interview. And as I was listening to it, I'm like, oh, it's better when the person knows what they're doing. And so then I called Michelle. Michelle's a very close friend of mine, but we're busy. You know, we've raised families. We haven't spent a lot of time together recently, but I thought, you know what? She's a professional broadcaster. I know her. So I reached out and I said, Michelle, I want to do this story. I want to tell people stories. I think everyone's a hero in their own life. Like, I want to tell stories. Do you want to be in? And she said, well, I spent a lot of time coaching my sons. They've gone off to play volleyball in university now. I have time. Let's do it. So we just decided we'd start this. And we sat down one day and generated a list of people that we knew that had been to Olympics and Paralympics. And they all said, yes, we haven't been rejected. Everyone said, yes, we interviewed them. And what I've been so, everyone has a story. It's been unbelievable what we've discovered about them. And I think as well during this time when we're so isolated, it's helped us to recognize the importance of connection. and that we can heal through story. We can learn through story. And you know what? We're all humans and we're all in it together. So that's my recollection of how it started. It'd be interesting to hear Michelle's version of how she thinks it started.
What if it's the complete opposite?
Yeah, that'll be interesting, eh?
Well, what's amazing, Ace, about Adrienne is in her job, she, as a sports psychologist, that's what you're doing all the time. You are looking into the inside of the athlete when no one else is. When we as fans, we watch athletes play and we just want them to be great and we want to be entertained and we want to see what they give us on the court or on the field. And really, once they're done, we like that. In fact, if they kind of let us down, sometimes we're disappointed in them and we kind of leave them there. And Adrienne can't leave them there because her job is when they maybe do disappoint, she's the one who has to sort of help them get back on their feet and go. And so because Heroes in Our Midst is about finding the human behind the performance, Adrienne, the fact that she came up with this idea did not surprise me at all. And it was amazing for me because in my years since going to the Olympics in 96 and being an Olympic athlete and having grown up in the sport in the 80s where no one really did care a lot about what was inside of us, our coaches really cared that the only thing inside of us would be strong enough and tough enough to win and to want to do that no matter what. They didn't really care if you had a bad day. They didn't really care how you wanted to train or what might be your best way to train that day. Nobody asked us. And so I've always had a passion. Also, maybe my road in sport, I've had a passion of who the people actually are in sport, because I was not supposed to be a volleyball player. Like, why did I pick that sport? And it was absolutely only the person inside that made my journey in sport possible. It was nothing I was given on the outside. I mean, I might be somewhat athletic, but what's inside of me had to be what it was in order for me to accomplish anything at all. And so when Adrienne came with this idea, and she just, I just need someone to be the voice. I just need someone to ask the questions, you know? And she was, I could ask them, but I just think it'd be better if you did it. And she told me the same story. And I'm like, are you kidding? Like, are you kidding? We get to tell these stories. And so Adrienne had a lot of the background and Adrienne, let's be honest, you just pulled guests out of like everywhere, out of all your client list. And then you could ask them permission. And they were like, yeah, I'll tell the story. And then when I started to dig in, Ace, like, I'm like, I think they're telling me this. Oh, I think they're, wow, we're getting deep. I think they're really saying, and you know, I was more honored than anything. And you know that when people say, I love talking to Ace Burpee, I think when people feel comfortable with you, you can tell they're getting more comfortable even as the conversation's going. And I've just been blown away. And every single guest that we've had so far, like you said, I've learned something and I've become a better person from the beginning to the end of however long our conversation is. Something somewhere I've heard something that I didn't think of before or has inspired me to live life differently. So for me, it started by this great friend and she's so smart. Oh my goodness. She's got a quote for everything. She has a reference. She's read a book about everything. I just live it and blab about it. And then she makes it all make sense, you know? So when she came and said that's what she needed, I said, well, that's what I love the best. I could talk and I love people that are real. And having been an athlete and having seen people look at me like I'm something different because I went to the Olympics. And then when they get to know me, they're like, wait a second, you're just totally like me. And I'm like, yes, yes, I am. And that's why I'm no better than you. Just because I have Olympics or something on my name, I've been passionate about that, trying to convince people that everyone is just as special and everyone is a hero and we just have to find them. And that's what Adrienne has given me the opportunity to partner with her in doing.
This is awesome. You sort of gave the perfect segue near the end of your answer, that because you can research, you can come as prepared as you have ever been in your life into an interview and still people are going to surprise you. Okay. Actually, before I get to that, this is going to be the wrong choice of words on purpose. There was this rumor about your mystique, Michelle, when I was at university. No, there was.
Really?
And it was big where I come from, the Cooks Creek, Oak Bank area. Why? I don't know. Okay. Even I remember this rumor again, don't worry. Don't stress. It's not. Okay. This rumor traveled to like my mother. I'm serious. So everyone that when I was growing up, whether it was high school and into university, knew who Michelle Sawatsky was because she just kept racking up banners and right. And it was like a thing. And we sort of had a, we would consider the Steinbeck area sort of, hey, she's sort of almost kind of where we're from, yada, yada. But then whenever someone would talk about her, I don't know why this was, they'd always tack on, yeah, I know, but I heard she also plays piano. And it was like this thing. Everyone would always, and then I remember my mother, well, no, doesn't she piano something? There was always this like tag on of the piano and no one ever looked into it. We were like, yeah, no, I heard that.
Okay, Ace, I have to tell you this. So she does play piano in our intro, outro. That's Michelle playing the piano. She wrote the piece because
I did not know that.
So then we didn't have to deal with the copyrights and everything. So she wrote all that and she recorded it in her home. And for the second season, we have that, but we've jazzed it up a little bit. We've gone to a professional studio and she worked with someone to make it sound a little bit more modern or whatever. But yes, that's Michelle's original work. And she also, when she was back then, she did a performance degree, which when you get to the university, not everyone does performance. You're chosen to do performance. So she was had to be pretty decent, but it's very demanding. So while she was playing volleyball at the university, she also did a performance degree. So there you can tell your mom that she does piano.
Yeah, the only volleyball player my mom knows. That's it. Okay, so you come into an interview and you've done all the prep. You know a ton about how you want to approach this interview, and then people will still surprise you. What were a couple of takeaways specifically that you learned about someone, whether it was a part of their story or something that just, you're like, whoa, what would that be?
I can do one right away. Okay. Justin Duff, he's a unbelievable volleyball player. Maybe that's why that strikes me, because it was my sport. And I thought I knew kind of Justin Duff because I would have followed him more closely than a lot of these other athletes. And I certainly knew the game he was playing. And this guy, what, he's 6'6", jumps 40 inches, some crazy vertical. Like he, to me, had everything. And Adrian had worked with him a bit and with, you know, the men's volleyball and all that. And I was like, why are we talking to Justin Duff? Like, what could his story possibly be? Oh, I was born with this great body and I jumped out of the gym and I made the national team and then I was a star. Like that for me wasn't a story. So, but I wanted to know because I knew there had to be a story there. And what's incredible is how much he struggled being that guy. How, when you are gifted and you're given what everyone thinks is everything you need, he showed me that he had to learn how to go from sort of an entitled athletic kid to sort of eat some humble pie. And then to, you know, you're on the bench and you're struggling with yourself. And then, you know, and then it didn't end. I mean, he played at university and was a star and then played national team and Olympics and all that. And then at the end of his career, how it ended, how there were just young guys coming up and what a struggle over and over and over again for this guy who I thought had everything. That blew me away. And how well spoken he was. Amazing. Yeah. That would be one.
Adrian.
And it's the opposite story of you, Michelle, you know, like, and that's why I think it might strike you because from your perspective, you knew your struggle, but not his. And I think that just helps to show us that, you know, that everyone struggles.
Awesome.
That is awesome.
Adrian, what's something that when you look back at them all and you're asked what surprised you, you're like, I'm going to have to go with?
For me, I feel like it's not any one story. I think for me, what surprised me is I would say a two-part. One is the brave space Michelle's created where it's so comfortable and everyone feels so valued and heard. And the energy that she brings to the conversation has been so wonderful. And then the part as well is I think it kind of what you spoke about is how almost healing people have found it to be seen. People, doesn't matter, person after person just finds it such a special process to really be in this conversation where they're celebrated. You know, and Michelle truly is authentically like so excited to hear about their story and hear about them. And so I think that that's been the other thing. It's made me kind of smile to see how special and valuable it has been for every guest and what a positive experience they have. And I think also the pride they take in now sharing their story so that other people can learn and grow from it. So again, it's just really, I think, show me the power of connection and story. And, you know, in our world, we spend so much time not that we don't want to, but not being really real with each other. You know, we play it safe, or we pretend, you know, and this, I think we're really just trying to create real authentic connection, you know, and get back to that. You mentioned your mom in a rural town, and you know, with all the social media, I wonder if we forget how to really do that. Although with COVID now we're shut down, and maybe we're going to do a better job with really reconnecting with our roots and with each other, because everything we need is right in front of us and right in here. You know, it's not out there to be had somewhere else. And maybe it's forcing us to do that. So yeah, I don't know if it's anyone's story, but even people that I was like, oh, I hope it goes okay. Everyone's been like, oh my God, that was incredible. Thank you so much. They thanked us. And I'm like, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's been incredible. And everyone too has been in such different parts of their journey. We've had people that, you know, a Kelsey Wog, and what was neat is like Kelsey and Vlastic, you know, Vlastic's her coach who's gone to the Olympics before with other athletes, but he's transformed as a coach in working with Kelsey. And he's transformed because he had to change the way he coached. She was this young, gifted athlete, but, you know, very sensitive and emotional. They had to learn to communicate at a deeper level. And he talks very openly about coming from the Czech Republic and not even knowing emotions existed, and now happy to recognize. And so, you know, that was an interesting dyad. And then we have, you know, a Skylar Park who has pre-qualified because she's top five in the world. And so she's quite young on her journey. And yet, you know, so her and her Master Park. And then we had, you know, Rhiannon Lear, who's been retired for quite some time. And so she's able to reflect back on her journey in a very different way. So we've had, you know, people who are going for the first time, people who are trying to get there again, people who've been gone for a while. And regardless of who they are, they're human. And that's something I'm very passionate about, is the idea of the human behind the performance. And at the end of the day, I remember I was listening to a Late Note at Night talk show person that I think was maybe James Corden. My daughter had taped it. And, you know, in it, he was in his garage and he said, gosh, you know, right now we're realizing that it doesn't matter who you are, how much, you know, we're all human beings at the end of the day, you know, like that might've been the label of what we do, but really there's a human behind it. And I think that's the thing too, as Michelle alluded to, is everyone's on a journey or a path in life, you know, and athletes are too, and they're not superhuman. They're human beings and they deal with emotions and feelings and being human. There's no robots, and they have to deal with all that to perform. And there's, you know, and I think, you know, it's been really fun. We just started with stories, but I think it's been incredible what's happened through the process for both Michelle and I. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, what's rocked my world, this whole Master Park and Skylar Park. So that's a father daughter. Okay. Yeah. So I coached my sons. Right. And so I said to her, I said, so like, how is that? You know, like when I coach my boys are done with me, like coaching, they're good. Thanks, mom. I know you did a whole bunch of volleyball stuff, but really I'm going to learn from somebody else now, you know? And I said, Skylar, let's be honest, you know, Skylar, it's your dad. Like, you got to get sick of that sometimes, in the house, out of the house, you know? And she goes, well, no, like he's the best there is. And he's going to help me win Olympic gold. Like, that's how they talk. It's a family, and that's what we do. And why would I not be coached by him? Because he's the best. I think it's a little bit cultural too. And him and I talked about that. I'm like, okay, let's talk about trying to coach our kids. Isn't it crazy? And he goes, we work together. We do what we need to do. And we're going to win Olympic gold. I'm like, how do you know that? He goes, well, I don't, but that's what we're talking. That's how we talk. And that's what we're going for, because I think Skylar can be the best in the world. Just incredible confidence, you know? And I have to tell you another one. Did you know Hector Vergara, who refereed at the World Cup, he talked about how many winters he trained in the parkades in Winnipeg, because that's the only place there wasn't snow, where, you know, you could practice running up and down and crazy stuff.
I have a story about almost everyone that's been on your podcast. So you just mentioned Kelsey. So I met her, we were watching a soccer game. She and her family were beside me at Canada game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I follow this. I'm a sports, like I follow everything, read everything and remember everything. And so her mom introduces me and I'm like, cause I know her times and I know how she's destroyed people in the pool. And I'm like, you are the quietest, most humble, and you're tiny and you're an absolute beast in the pool. And I'm like, that is fascinating. And that's a secret weapon. You can use that. Skylar Park was probably the first person I thought of when they for sure canceled the Olympics. Cause I'm like, you gave up going out with your friends. You gave up so much and did everything correctly. And now that journey's far from over. So that's good. But then also, Adrian, you said very early in your answer to what surprised you was people enjoyed being seen. And I've tried to do that Well, consciously, yes. But since maybe a couple months into COVID, making sure everyone is seen. So on my radio show, trying to think of what everyone is going through and making sure everyone is seen. And I think that's an underrated little, I wouldn't even call it a little thing. And it's something that I'm far more conscious of now. And it's interesting that you said that phrase, because yes, people do, even if they don't know they want to be seen, mm-hmm. that sometimes it's very freeing and for to be able to share something with others. And I think that's underrated. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to ask you, because this is inspired by, I'll say two guests specifically, but I think it'd be interesting to know your answers to this. And it can be a physical place or it can just be sort of a space, okay? So I'll mention Kylo Harris was a recent guest, and then Nadia Crossman-Serb.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll use those two. They were guests, they were amazing. I'll use those two as examples for my question. Ready? They talked about sort of where they belong, whether it was Nadia because she was like the Métis world, the Muslim world, and am I on the fringes of these different communities? But then she said, I felt at home in a book. And then Kylo was talking about how a large part of him, he just is at peace and belongs in the North. And so there's different places where you truly feel you actually belong. And so where is that for you two?
I know for me, that's where COVID's been hard for me, is because I feel like, I don't know, I didn't know if I knew this before you asked this question, but it just came right into my head just now. And I feel like I'm at home when I'm connecting with people. I feel like I'm at home when I am talking to someone and getting to know them and trying to make them feel good or make them feel better. Or I've said to people before, I think I'm at home on the stage. That's how it used to be, sort of. It's been taken away a little bit right now because big groups can't come together. And whether that was music or emceeing, you know, you do a ton of that and, you know, or speaking and sharing, but then it's the after part of not just being on the stage. That's okay. And that's all fun, but connecting with people and people coming and saying that connected with me. I just feel like, I think that's what I was supposed to do. And I think when Adrian brought this to the table, I'm like, if that's connecting with people, wherever that's happening, I think I'll feel at home.
Good answer. Adrian.
It's interesting. I think of that question a little bit more too, because of some situations I find myself in, but I for sure feel very at home, maybe even the opposite of Michelle, very behind the scenes, very much in the field of play. I feel very at home when I'm helping people strive and supporting them and whatever that means. And I also feel very at home with my family. Recently, I've had opportunities where I've needed to be more the forward-facing person, where I've had to speak to like a board of directors or governor, you know, and I don't feel at home there at all. That's very outside of my comfort zone. Yeah, I feel very at home when I blend in and I raise other people up, is how I would say it.
Awesome answers. Okay, I wanted to throw this one out because you've got a nice, your lived experiences, and then there's a nice mix of like a Schuyler Park is literally almost just starting her journey. And then you have people who have retired from the game. So you had a nice cross section in there. And if you apply this to your lives, what would be something you learned that if you went back 30 years ago, you would have done something differently in terms of sport?
I would have taken more time to have more fun when I played volleyball. Yeah. Just really... I know for sure that I love the game of volleyball and I loved playing it, but in the environment that I was brought up in the sport, there was a lot of trepidation walking in the gym and I hope I don't screw up today and I hope I don't get in too much trouble today. And we found joy in those drills. You know, the drills got going and we were competing and things were going well. I learned to define fun and joy by the success we had and how good we were and how close to perfect we were at the University of Manitoba and all that. But I think I would have loved to seen how good we all could have gotten if we had just been allowed a little more joy and a little less fear in approaching some of the skills that we were performing. And my sets had to be so perfect. I mean, how many days were my hands shaking just a little because I had to get five more perfectly there instead of, you know, hey, let's make our left side hitters rock today. You know, me and my other setter, you know, woo, let's like just love that, you know, and that would have been pretty cool. I think we would have been even better.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Great answer. Because there be a tinge of, you can't get that back, right? Yeah. And you didn't think of it at the time. That's awesome. Adrian?
It's interesting because I wonder if this is sort of the stock answer, but it's a different version of that. I for sure think that I would have liked to have put less pressure on myself and to have been more in the moment. I spent a lot of time being worried. And I think for me, it was a little bit different because of the role sport played in my life, and I needed it so much. And I always felt like I had to be the best because I couldn't be vulnerable to not being there. And perhaps it drove me to be the best version of myself. But when you look at my athletic ability, you know, I think I definitely got the most out of myself, but I don't think I needed to. I could have just been me, you know, and allowed someone else to rise, you know, and been a better teammate and been happier for other people when they were successful, rather than always needing that to be me for other reasons, I think. So I think that was it. I would have relaxed into the moment more and enjoyed sport for what it was, rather than it being the be-all and end-all in my life.
Awesome answers. This is great. Who was the very first guest? Do you remember?
Chantel Van Landegan.
Okay, so I went through when you first said, hey, maybe we should get together and look back on season one. So I started listening to these things. Full disclosure, I didn't scroll all the way to the bottom.
Yeah.
And I just saw it last night. I'm like, Chantel Van Landegan was on. I didn't listen to that. But then I'm like, maybe I'm going to not listen to it on purpose and see if, did she mention anything to do with a famous Winnipeg connection that she has?
With Jeannie's Bakery?
Oh my gosh, do you know that?
Yeah. It's her grandma.
Isn't that the wildest thing?
It is. Well, and what, even when she was a young swimmer, she's a great example of one of those really humble, like, local athletes, but sometimes she'd drop off a Jeannie's cake every once in a while, but her dad worked the night shift at that bakery. Well,
that is the greatest connection.
And she's also a great example. A lot of times you have these really involved parents, and in swimming, you can have parents who have 10 stopwatches going for their kids. Her parents were working, you know, her mom was a TA, I think, and her dad was working nights at the bakery, and her and Tia were just swimming. And yet she had all that ability in her, and she didn't need that parent with 10 stopwatches. She was able to figure it out on her own.
Ace, I have to tell you though, why we chose Chantel as our first guest. So our initial plan was, and we're hilarious because we had no clue what podcasts, like what, whatever. So we thought during the Olympics, okay, however long the Olympics is, I don't know what it is, I should know, but I don't know, 3 weeks, so I don't know, whatever.
Two and a half, I think it's like a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. We were going to drop an episode every day of the Olympics because we wanted to tell Olympic stories. We can't watch the Olympics. Let's listen to Olympic stories. And so I start pounding out the interviews. Like, I'm just doing stories. I'm doing two a days. I'm driving into Winnipeg from my hometown of Steinbach, and we're just piling. I'm just like,
you also wanted to do them all in person in the first season. I did. They're all in person. She literally drove to people's houses from Steinbach for these interviews. Yeah. And did all 35 of them in like a week. Like, it was a lot.
So my husband, who is a graphic designer and is a little more into social media than I am, obviously, he says, what are you doing? No one is going to listen to two podcasts a day or whatever you're trying to do. So, like, let's hold on, hold the phone here. Like, let's slow this down. And then we thought it would be a great idea if and my husband, bless his soul, he's the most lovely, honest person. You know what you get when you talk to him.
He was super kind when he talked to us, though.
He's like, well, you know, you should probably have someone a little more well-known, like, just to sort of catch the attention, you know?
He's like, you guys might be good at what you do, but they I don't know if you're going to draw them in.
So we thought with Chantel, Olympic medalist, and, you know, her story of missing the Olympics in 2012 by 1/100, and then, you know, 4 more years, right? That's an incredible story. And she's a wonderful speaker. She's so well-spoken and just amazing. And how she actually thought, you know, for a moment when she didn't qualify that first time, that her parents were disappointed. And then she says it in the interview, she says it so well. I learned they weren't disappointed in me. They were so disappointed for me the first time she saw her dad cry. And what a great choice for our first guest.
That's an awesome line, that they weren't disappointed in her. They're disappointed for her. That's so cool.
And that's a great example when that experience had, it was absolutely devastating. And you never know the impact you have on someone's life. And so she had come back from the games and she was sitting in my office and we were talking about the experience. And, you know, I was keeping it together pretty good, but then she got to the point where she said, yeah, it's the first time I saw my dad cry. And so I'm like, I got this tear and I'm just trying to hold it up, you know, like, but I didn't know she noticed, went on to other things. And then years later, Chantel comes back to our community. She's doing her PhD in clinical psych now. I was co-advising her, you know, bring her back. And we were doing something at Vincent Massey Collegiate. And afterwards we had done our series. And so I said, hey, let's go for lunch. So we go for lunch. So this is many years later. And we sit down and she goes, you know, I remember that moment in your office and I could see that you had a tear. And she goes, I knew you cared. And she goes, that made a lot of difference kind of thing. And so, you know, you just never know the impact you have on someone, you know? And yeah. I think that's all we have to offer people really is ourselves, you know? And I think it's so important to take care of ourselves so we can be available and people aren't alone in those deep moments. And that's my big thing in sport. It's a journey that has a lot of adversity and a lot of pain. And I never want an athlete to feel alone in those spots. And as a system and as people, sometimes people do feel alone because it's uncomfortable. But then, you know, as Chantel, it's not disappointed in you, it's for you. And I think that's true for a lot of us. So it's a really beautiful story. And then 4 years later, when she was part of the team that won the first medal for Team Canada, and one of my colleagues, Judy Gosh, she's a sports psych person out of Toronto, and she was on the pool deck. And, you know, that's where, again, connections, we all take care of each other. She just sent me a picture of Chantel holding her medal with the biggest smile on her face, because I think she knew how much that would mean to me. And so I still remember getting that picture from a friend who cares about me, you know, and I was able to look at that and be like, wow. And we worked really hard because I knew that she was young and had so much talent. And so we actually got the video of that failed experience and we watched it enough times so that she didn't have emotion around it. And we talked a lot about how she wanted to do it differently next time. So I knew that when she went back to the trial, she wouldn't be overwhelmed by emotion in that experience. She was ready to go compete and she did. So, you know, it's amazing that through that brokenness, she's able to stand on the foundation of that and have these other experiences, because that's the way humans are. Our brains are beautiful and we remember that pain unless we process it, and we have to process it so we can move forward.
What's really cool to me too is you talk about how the path of an athlete can be really painful, but then you stop being an athlete and then you get into the real world and your path can be really painful and yeah. You're supposed to be great. And there's an imbalance there and in how society places importance on things. And that's why when we look inside, it just gets me going, because athletes are done being athletes at a certain age. And then what? But what they have learned through that intense, you know, a lifetime is poured into an athlete's journey, you know, and perhaps in our lives, if we aren't athletes, we don't hit those intense spots in our lives, but we can learn from them. And I think every intensity and every up and down in my life after having been an athlete has carried me through. And that's what I think these people's stories speak to us. And it's not, because some people have said, oh, it's just Olympians. Oh, okay. Well, I'm not really into sports. So I don't know if I'd like your podcast, because I don't really, you know, I don't really watch sports. I said, no. It's about sports happened to be how we started finding these people and what they did. But wow, has it ever proven that who they are is the human inside, and whatever they did really was the vehicle that got us to know them and got society to sort of call them heroes. And now we're really finding out why they are.
You, even if it didn't come up specifically, the word sacrifice in an interview with one of your guests, you know, even without hearing a story of something they've had to sacrifice or give up to go after a certain goal. But to me, those stories, so I think Adrian and Michelle, your lived experiences with sport, you would actually be less blown away by this than the person who didn't do that. But a theme, so again, even if the word sacrifice didn't come up in an interview, there it pops up in various ways with almost everyone, that you had to give this up or put this to the side. That's still, to the person who didn't pursue or couldn't or didn't want or whatever, a certain very specific goal. I think it is fascinating because generally people won't do that. It's uncomfortable. There's a million reasons. And I find that fascinating. And it would never get old to me, as in, and it doesn't even have to be a specific, like it can be a sacrifice as in within sport, right? As in, I was amazing at this, but I had to give that up to do this, or I had another massive talent and that had to be put to the side. And I don't think that that theme can be revisited enough, because I think it's fascinating to people who didn't have to make that choice.
And maybe just the sacrifice is getting out of your comfort zone, sacrificing your comfort and saying, I actually really want that. People are so afraid to say what they really want, because what if they don't get it? Well, then you're going to be sad, but you won't get it anyway, even if you don't risk to go there. And man, like, you hit the nail on the head when you talk to so many of these people. Okay. You know what came to mind when you talk about sacrifice in real life? It was someone's mom, someone who I interviewed, Joey Johnson, Paralympic basketball. What did he win, Adrian? Everything?
Yeah.
Well, he went to five games.
Yeah. Yeah. Five games. Yeah.
No and one goes to five anything.
I know. It's a 20-year period of time, right?
So right.
Incredible.
Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
Amazing. And you know what struck me about his whole story, even though the whole thing is totally amazing and his perseverance is amazing, for when they first realized he was 8 years old, right? And he started to, you know, he couldn't walk. It took him 45 minutes to walk home from school. And so there was something wrong. And so for a while, he got pretty depressed as a kid and just wanted to stay in his room. Didn't want to leave his room. And his mom just kept dragging him out of the room. When he started doing wheelchair sports, she just said, "We're going. I don't want to go. We're going. I don't want to go. Look at me. I can't do it. We're going." And the risk she took to take her boy, like, to what she didn't even know would be what it would turn out to be for him. And it turned out to be something so unbelievably incredible, but she sacrificed her own self. She was potentially dragging her son to something where he could drastically fail at, and it could devastate him. But she was willing to do that for the possibility that he would find his life again, you know, and find something that he loved. And as a mom, I was like emotional. I'm sure I edited some of that out because it took me far too long to get back to the next question. But I was like, but how did she know to do that? Why didn't she want to just hold you and protect you from everything instead of putting you in the line of fire? And thank goodness she did that.
I was in London at his last Paralympics and they won a gold medal there. And so can you imagine what that, so you talk about that beginning and then you look into the crowd and you see that mom watching her son earn a gold medal at the Paralympic Games, you know, at his last Paralympics. And that was a tough journey for that team too. They had a kind of a tough quadrennial leading up to that, but everything just came together and worked and they won that gold medal. And so in the Paralympic sport, we can see, but every one of those athletes, right, has that those people in the background that have been on that journey with them. And I agree, it's pretty special to watch that happen for sure.
What happens when you would have known this going in, but still to hear it from her. So we've all torn an ACL or a groin or a shoulder, and that's the way it goes. But when you sat down and turned the mics on, and Leanne Taylor, who does para triathlon. So I will admit, I didn't know that there was a para triathlon. And then, so I'm listening to her. Well, I went down a rabbit hole. I'm like, this is freaking fascinating. Like, it was awesome. So to go from going for bike rides and doing all these things, and then the elapsed time between an accident and participating in high level sport, to me, that was shocking that you had to process it and leave something entirely behind. I thought that was amazing. And I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us do unless we're in that situation.
Fair.
And Leanne, though, is a special person. Her sense of gratitude and joy, and not everyone would be there, and she is. And what's interesting about her, I'm not sure if it had happened yet by the time the podcast happened, but Silken Lohmann, who's a rower in our country who had an injury, she's actually changed Leanne's potential in sport because she heard about her story, just heard about her as a person, and she bought her equipment. So now she can compete at the highest level. So now technology is so important in sports like that. And before, she was competing out of sheer will, but did not have what she needed to be successful. Now she does, because of Silken Lohmann's generosity. So she now has everything she needs, and she'll be incredible, partly because of her will and partly because she now has the right equipment.
When I chatted with her, Adrian, we did that interview in the summer of 2020. And when I chatted with her, I walked into her house And this was when that was still allowed. I walk into her house and right to the left of this shiny, shiny, shiny new paratriathlete bike, right? Where she lies down, right? Flat, which was also amazing. And I said, oh, is this your bike? And she goes, it is now, but I can't talk about it on the podcast yet. And I said, why? She goes, because Silk and Lauman bought it for me. And we have to make sure it's all confirmed that I can talk about it. So I won't be able to talk about it in our interview today. And I said, Silk and Lauman bought you a bike? And she goes, I know, isn't it incredible? Like Silk and Lauman's famous. Like she was like, it was like Christmas the day I went. And this bike still had the tags on it when I walked into the home. And she was just thrilled. And Jared Funk, who is also one of our guests, also a Paralympian in the craziest sport of wheelchair that rugby. He talked to Leanne in the hospital room. Like she was in the hospital and the Paralympic organization said, hey, Jared, go talk to her. I think she's an athlete. She might want to do Paralympic sport. Like you're right. The turnaround was crazy.
And it's not for everyone, and everyone does it at a pace that works for them.
Yeah.
It's kind of where she's at. And she sees it as an opportunity that she wouldn't have had in the past. And so she's going to do everything she can with it. And that's truly where she sits with it. It's it helps to give you strength when you speak with someone who has so much strength within them, I think.
She rules, and that sport rules. Unbelievable. Actually, I'll tell you who else rules. How great was Elliot Gray?
Elliot Gray is one of the most powerful people I know. And Elliot Gray has been just an incredible human. When Elliot was younger and rode as Emma was just an incredible athlete and was nominated for an Athlete of the Year award, but she's a very proud vegan and it was sponsored by a non-vegan organization and she refused to go. And I remember thinking, wow, when I was like 16, I would have taken the award. There's no way I would have been that valuable. Right. You know, like I was like, right. Wow, that's incredibly courageous. I can't believe it. Like I literally was taken aback because I would have wanted the award so badly. But wow, do you learn a lot? Just such a powerful human being. And I can't even tell you enough about what I've learned through Elliot, even about the high performance sports system and where we have flaws. And it's been incredible. But yeah, Michelle, what was your conversation like with him?
Well, you know, it was cool because I could be super honest with him. I mean, even just being able to ask all the questions, you know, what's it really like? And the thing that hit me the most, and I've said this to a few people in my conversations about that particular interview, was that I asked him about Emma because he is Elliot now. And I asked him how that fits for him having been Emma. And he goes, well, I love her because she lived so that I could live. He said so many young people, they don't make it. They don't make it because they can never be who they are. And she wasn't who she needed to be at the time. And he had so many struggles and so much like, who am I? Where do I fit? This isn't working for me. And do I understand myself, right? In all of his searching, like what's going on inside of me? And he talked about her like she was a different person, but how much he loved her for making it, for being strong enough to make it so that now he can live. And that's powerful for me.
And it goes to show you as well, because for Elliot, there was a time Emma had gone to a world championships and was Team Canada wanted her to go to another world championships. Unbelievably gifted. Like one of the top erg scores. She was a junior rower and was beating Olympians with erg scores. And Emma wasn't able to verbalize why they couldn't go to that race. They just felt this, you know, this incredible anxiety, but very a huge person of integrity. So flew out to where the national team coach was to sit down and wanted face to face to say that I can't go to this world championships, and came back and I was like, oh, so what was it like? And they're like, it was really weird. I couldn't even explain it. I just knew I couldn't do it. Now that Emma is Elliot will say, now I have the words for it. I couldn't race because I wasn't a female and I couldn't race as a female at the world championships, but I didn't know that then. And so for me, I can look like a hero because I supported Elliot in that place, but Elliot had this unbelievable coach, Jeanine Hansen, who's another guest of ours, a young coach who supported that athlete in that place. This doesn't happen a lot because you're getting pressured from the national team. So because the coach supported Elliot, I could. Now, if I had a coach that wasn't supportive, would I have been strong enough? I think now I would, but back as I was a younger consultant, I'm like, I don't know. I probably would have pressured Emma to go to that world championships. I probably, you know, and so again, it's just what success getting Emma there. At the time, it would have looked like it, but that wouldn't have been success because that would have then maybe not helped Emma be strong enough to make it to be Elliot, you know? And so it's just interesting when we sometimes reflect on what is success in that moment, but really profound conversation with someone who is probably more mature and worldly than I was, even though I was the person helping them, you know, I grew a lot as a human being. And that's the privilege of the work I get to do. I get to spend time with these incredible people that teach me so much and help me mature. But yeah, I was so struck by that. Such a great example of, you know, we don't always fit. And this person didn't really understand or have the words for it, but they were still right. And they still knew what they were experiencing. And sometimes we just have to support someone where they are, even if we don't really understand what they're trying to tell us.
Awesome. I remember my sister. My sister's fascinating, by the way. She's a dancer. She's been a dancer her whole life and okay, like phenomenal. And I remember she had, and she would have been like 18, and she had a little piece of paper in her room that she had just written, and it said, there's only one true success, and that's to live life in your own way. And that was like, this is years ago. And she did. And I, like, my sister can't get rich being the greatest contemporary dancer in the history of Canada. That's not how it goes. You know what I mean? But that was her thing. And yeah, it's cool. People that live their truth like that. I loved that Elliot Gray. Like I loved it. I'm going to go with, ready? This is about you two. And I'd say the worse your answer is, the better. So you're looking to expose yourself a little bit. But if when you were 13, you could have sat and interviewed anybody for this podcast that remarkably you had at 13, who would have been that person when you were 13?
Ooh, it's tough to reflect back to that day because that's a long time ago. I know we look very young, but I'm going to think back to people that I was fascinated by growing up. You know, Ben Johnson was someone that I really revered, and I was very devastated when that whole situation happened. And I probably would have been in my teenager years. So I think it would have been interesting. I don't know. I would have liked to have talked to him maybe. And even Michael Jordan. It's sad to me as I'm saying this that it's all males. Actually, I find myself wishing it wasn't, but maybe that's just, I was an athlete and a sport person, and maybe that's what was covered. Cause I'm like, why is it only men, Adrian? But yeah, I think Michael Jordan was someone that I admired. So probably I was pretty into sport, and that's all I did. So I probably would answer with someone that I admired in sport.
If I think back to when I was 13, I was in love with Broadway. So at 13, I was not going to go to the Olympics. I was going to be a Broadway singer, an actor, and I was going to be famous. And I was just, I loved Barbara Streisand.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I know. I don't know. She wasn't like cool, I guess, but man, can she sing, you know? And I just loved her. So maybe something like that, or someone who was, you know, famous in New York at the time. But sports wise, I'll tell you what, when I was 13, oh, I wanted to play because my sister was amazing and she played, and I don't know, we could go to McDonald's after the tournament or something. I don't know.
That's awesome. That's why we used to love playing the Steinbach Millers, because there was a McDonald's there.
See?
Oh, game changer. You being 13 and not being into the names of athletes and whatever. Yeah. You know who you're like? Dustin Byfuglien. I couldn't name anybody that played hockey. It was so funny. I wanted to jump off of that with who would be, though, an absolute dream guest. Even if it's, I mean, it'd be a real stretch to land this person, who would be a dream conversation.
Well, we probably wouldn't get 7 million, but I'd talk to Harry and Meghan. Adrian texted me that day. She says,
yeah, I text Michelle every once in a while because we do it for nothing. And I was like, oh, so I heard Oprah got 7 million for interviewing Harry and Meghan. I was like, we may need to increase your rates from free. So anyways, yeah, no kidding. Eh? You know what's so interesting? I'm going to answer it in this way. And we had been talking to some people and they were you know, they wanted to partner with us and get our numbers up and stuff like that and look at the data. And afterwards, it just didn't sit right. And I called Michelle afterwards and I was like, oh, okay, I figured it out. I figured out why it bothers me. And I'm like, because I value every story. You know what I mean? I don't think any story is better because they get more people or whatever. So anyways, I'm just going to say that first before I answer, but I don't know. I feel so privileged to have had the conversations we do, but certainly in my area, like I love Brené Brown. I think she'd be fun to talk to. You know, but although I think like we have Christina Fink and Peter Jensen and these other incredible humans too, I think every story is amazing. So yeah, I don't know. For me, it's like, I like to get to know the person a little bit. So it's tough to answer when I don't know the human, you know. Even Michelle was like, why did I get Justin Duff? And then she found out, oh, Justin Duff had a single mom, you know, like, anyways, I'm like, oh yeah, that's why she's meeting with Justin Duff, you know, like, so I think that I need to meet with the human first and see what their story is, because it's not about what they've accomplished, but it's about who they are and how they've accomplished it, you know? And can people learn from your experience and your story? Someone I would love to have, Michelle, though, is Ace Burpee. I think that would be unbelievable, eh?
Oh, well, yeah. We have a connection now, so maybe.
I'm bringing straight fire when I'm telling you. Like straight pure fire. And like I already told you, there's a paper trail. Nothing's off the table. Nothing. You can, we'll go whatever, wherever you want to go, but I am bringing pure heat when I'm on this. I'll tell you right now.
Amazing. Well, we love it.
You know, what's funny when you asked that, and I thought, I can't think of anyone. It wasn't coming to me. It just did now, because Adrian and I had a conversation at one point and we're getting a new website and all that stuff. And what should we put on there? And in Adrian's incredible wisdom and the time that she puts into researching things and reading different things and all that, we're just talking kind of on a document about, well, we should direct them to this podcast or this website or this thing. And she's talking about Michael Phelps chatted with someone else in an interview. And I just sort of joked and I said, well, why would we want to direct people to Michael Phelps' conversation with someone else when I'm going to talk to him? And I was kidding. But then I thought, like, to talk to someone like that would just be incredible to talk to them ourselves. And then I thought to myself, you know what? There are some things that we've done in our lives, probably all three of us, we never thought we would. So I don't know. Why not Michael Phelps? Maybe he'll answer the call one day.
Awesome. I want to fit this in before we get out of here, but you had Leisha on, baton, right? Okay, great. Well, Leisha, very recently during COVID, my girlfriend's probably best friend is celebrating a big, huge birthday. Okay. And this friend was in this baton world with Leisha. Okay. And so we do a classic early morning Sunday drive-by birthday parade. Okay. It's with the wind, I think it's minus 47. Okay. So I am at the front of this parade with, so my girlfriend Michelle, she's in the back holding a sign, yada yada. Except we're not actually leading the parade, everyone. No joke. In minus 47 with the wind is Leisha on foot out in front doing a baton routine for her friend. It was I actually cried a little bit. That's how adorable it was. Not only did she do that in minus 47 for a good friend to make a very special memory, she was nailing every single, she's throwing it way in the air, caught it every single time. I'm like, if you did this and it was the single worst performance of all time, it'd still be good. But no, caught it every single time. I'm like,
okay, so Leisha is seriously it's so telling that you'd say that. She's literally the kindest human being I've ever met in my lifetime. I've never seen someone give back so much in my life. Like, I'm surprised she even has a body left. Like, you know, like, she's just so giving and so kind to every human being she meets. It blows my mind. And yeah, it's incredible. When I was at a conference with her in Spain, actually, we were trying to bring a World Congress to Canada and we got denied. We didn't win it, guys. It was very upsetting, but whatever. So she was my roommate and it would just happen to be like World Baton Day or something like that. And so one of her friends had uploaded a video. So in our hotel room, I'm watching this video of her. It blew my mind. If you just Google Leisha Strong Baton and look at the videos, you'll see her do this routine at the World Championships and you'll be like, what? That was you? Like spinning around, like, it was crazy what she made happen. And it's again, and for her, the Black Lives Matter movement has been really I think, awakening for her, just mm-hmm. recognizing before it was just sort of, she always would do these accommodations, always dyed her own tights, you know, but just small things like, you know, in dance, you want everyone to look the same. Well, she couldn't put her hair up like that, yeah, you know? Yeah, and yeah. So there was just a lot of like small microaggressions that I think she's more aware of. And she's really taken an advocacy role, much to her ado. I think she's also a behind the scenes person, but it's really sparked her to play that role. So yeah, she's incredible. I can't even believe she did that, but yet if anyone was going to, it would be legit. Right.
That's as soon as I saw that that's what their intent was, I'm like, well, I don't need to really know anything else to know that you're a good person and you care a lot about the happiness of your friend. It was awesome. I think you should, and you can be as elusive as you like, but if I was recommending you do anything right now, Michelle and Adrian, I'd say offer a couple of what's coming up. You got a wicked awesome lineup. So as much or as little as you'd like to tease, people love that stuff.
I would say when anyone asks me who's coming up, I always think of Dr. Chow Pham, always, because that story, I knew what the story was and having, you know, done my research and my work ahead and being prepared, but I had no idea, you know, what was going to hit me when she told her story and being 5 years old from Vietnam and her mom and dad put her on a boat. Without them, that's all they could muster up was enough. That got her on the boat for her to have opportunity. And they watched their 5-year-old and they asked a family that was with, you know, a family that was going, could you please just watch out for our 5-year-old daughter? And a poignant moment in that story, and you'll want to hear this, is she has children now. And I asked her, so in all of this that you've lived, can you imagine taking your child as much as you know that that opportunity did for you? And put her on a boat and send her to the unknown. What a journey she's been on to reconcile that, even in understanding how her parents could have done that to her. And then again, how her parents could have done that for her. What an incredible journey. Just an incredibly accomplished emergency room physician and, you know, an unapologetically human in how real she is when she tells her story. And, you know, Adrian brought many of these guests to the table and that you've talked to them. I think Gordon McGinnis, firefighter, how he wasn't okay. And now he's back. Incredible.
For me, you know, again, Michelle and I really, we got into this because of COVID and we wanted to tell stories. And our first season was athletes and we wanted to expand beyond that. And just we are entitling our second season Unapologetically Human. And we really wanted to look at all walks of life. We have a small business owner. We have a principal, we have medical professionals, we have all people. Everyone's life has been impacted by this global pandemic. We're living history right now. And again, we just wanted to connect and tell stories so we can keep each other well right now. And we're so, Michelle and I are just so honored and privileged that people trust us with these stories and that they're willing to tell these stories to help others be better. And we'll always be thankful. We're starting the season with Coach O'Shea. And so just prior to this whole, before our world changed, you know, one of the last celebrations we had was a Grey Cup parade and a Grey Cup championship after 29 seasons. And again, Michelle's alluded to the fact that sometimes we like results on the field, but it's really about what happens behind. And I've never met a coach who cares so deeply about every person he interacts with and who values team above everything and sometimes makes really confusing decisions to the general public because of that, but he values team above all else and really lives that. And so we'll start there and we'll move on. But even as I think our hope is that we're able to get more people to listen, because as I was hearing Michelle, what was going through my head is like, oh man, people need to hear this. This stuff's so good. And yeah. Michelle and I just get so into it. We're just so passionate about the resilience of human beings and the unbelievable power. Brené Brown, I mentioned someone that I really value, and I was reading her book, Dare to Lead. And at the start of a chapter, she has this quote talking about kind of the world and where we're at and how the economy used to be about, kind of what we did, you know, in coal mines and labor. And then the last little bit, it's been about what we know. So cognitive stuff. And she goes, moving forward, it's going to be the human stuff that we can't replace with artificial intelligence. That's where the magic's going to be. It's going to be about the human heart and connection. And, you know, that's just where we're headed. And I love that because it really resonates for me. My mantra is always embrace humanity, elevate your performance. So, you know, and that's like looking at humans in general, but also who we are as humans and how we do it. And that's what's so incredible. Every person really is unique and we get the privilege of listening to their story.
This is awesome. You can tell when someone is telling you everything and telling the truth. And I've enjoyed that. I have great respect for those who will talk about things that didn't work out exactly how they wanted to, and embracing that you're going to have to rack up a few L's along the way in life. I think that is super underrated, where people are very, as you know, they like to paint a very beautiful picture with what they show the world on online, and that's not the truth. And I thought that was awesome. And I learned some things that I didn't know, and was introduced to some new ideas and new people. I thought everyone did a tremendous job, and I look forward to more of them. I think it's awesome.
Thank you, Ace, for saying yes when we asked you to join us, for taking the time to listen to some of the incredible stories from season one, and for helping us look back at the stories from athletes to coaches to officials to medical staff, past, present, and future. From Olympic sports like swimming, rowing, diving, volleyball, basketball, baseball, golf, soccer, canoe, kayak, and so much more. And Ace, just for being an incredible human yourself, we are really looking forward to having you back as one of our featured heroes in season two, along with Coach Mike O'Shea, Blue Bomber Andrew Harris, sports broadcasting legend Ron McLean, to world-renowned sports psychologists like Peter Jensen, Wade Gilbert, and Christina Fink, to world-class curler Reed Carruthers. We've also got a firefighter, an RCMP, a principal, a small business owner, and more, all in this time of COVID. And no matter who they are or what journey life chose for them, above all, they are unapologetically human. And you don't want to miss their stories. Season 2 episodes will start dropping at the start of May. Our new website will soon be up and running, and we'd love if you'd subscribe to Heroes in Our Midst. Thanks for listening.